Alright, so hello and welcome to episode number 18 from The Raven in the Road. Today we are going to finish our conversation with Fred Hines. So in part 3, Fred takes us through his experience with Night Lights Sky Lantern Festival, which hosts events all across the U.S. From his initial introduction through his current leadership roles, Fred shows us how his continual commitment and passion for these events has led to incredible rewards both within the outcome of the festival itself and for him personally. Okay, so you talked earlier on about the different festivals from the pools up to what you've been doing in Concord, which I didn't actually know was still going. So I'm going to have to keep an eye out for that because I didn't know that's still a thing. But you briefly mentioned this lantern festival. So can you kind of walk us through?
Yeah, so I have taken some time off from Shakedown. You were talking about Shakedown. That started here in Concord. We've taken some time off and tried to rebuild the events a little bit bigger, a little bit more well-ran. When I started the festival in 2013, 14, 15, I can't remember the exact year we started. I want to say it was 2014. The red tape wasn't there like it is now. And just these few short years, this few 10 years, right? Things have changed. You really have to have your crap together. You got to have a lot of things, insurance, security. You need lights in the parking lot so no one's getting, taken advantage of. Like, there's so many things that when we started this, it was very grassroots. And it was kind of like, let's throw a field party. We're good at throwing parties. We could get away with it. But as it scales and as the world has changed, the environment of, I guess, what you would call sue culture, people are looking for a lawsuit constantly or looking to write you a bad review over a stubbed toe. It's like, man, you stumped your toe on that rock. Right. Why is it my fault? We should have had a rubber walkway. I'm like, oh, Lord, there's so many things in the world. So we've kind of taken a step back and tried to make sure each event is fully covered. It's well thought out. Before, when we were doing it twice a year, it had started to become a lot of work and a bigger investment than I could financially afford. So we took some time off, kind of continued to focus on my career with music. And that was another thing. My career with music was getting much more demanding. I was playing a lot more shows, traveling a lot more. And I was like, okay, is it the Shakedown you want to, you're truly trying to pursue, or are you trying to pursue a music career? You don't have to choose, but you need to start making sure you're not overexhausting both rather than, just take some time off from one. So we did that. The last one we did was in 2021, which went really well. And the time we'd done that, we took two year break. And we did one during COVID because we were like, everything's shut down. Let's have our own thing, which we had one of our best ones yet, and decided to follow it up a year later. And I haven't done one since 2021 because I fell into the festival role. So in 2019, I had some mutual friends who work for a sound company called PSP, and they were running sound for this lantern festival, this Night Light Sky Lantern Festival. And Danny Miller and Tom Kissinger are their names. Give them a shout out if you ever need any sound companies. They're the best in the business around the area. But anyways, they're working sound for this company. And I had recently ran into Danny in a restaurant in Charlotte. And he said, man, I need to keep you in mind for this festival. We could, have you out to play it. And I was like, dude, I'd love that, man. And, I've heard about it. Would love to come play. So in 2019, in October, I get a call. And he's like, can you come down in 2 weeks and play this show? And I'm like, absolutely. Pays $500, we'll fly you down here, they'll rent you a car, they'll get you a hotel. I was like, this is incredible. Right. Yes. And at the time, going through, like I had said, the dauntingness of changing band members, not being with a comfortable band, wondering is music something that I can financially sustain to raise a family, to become the man I want to be, just having these conflicting thoughts, the doubts that are in your mind. Everyone has them with everything in life, and I was having mine. So I get this call to do this festival, go down, the owner of the festival picks me up from the airport, and you know, we have about an hour ride to the venue, and he's listening to all this great music, and we're just kind of chatting back and forth about all this stuff we know and these artists, and just hitting on a lot of points that we mutually liked, a lot of mutual likes and taste in music, and had just a great conversation going down. And as you know, I'm a talker. I can talk. It's one of my strong points. And we just, man, had such a good conversation. At the end, he was like, man, I really like you, dude. You know, I hope your music's good. I've never heard you. And I started laughing. I said, man, this is wild, dude. This is wild. So I'm thinking the whole time, you know, they got probably four or five artists here. You know, they're expecting 16,000 people. We show up and, you know, I get up to the stage, you know, see Danny, Tom, hug him. I'm like, what's up, you guys? You know, it's great to see you. Thanks for having me down. This is incredible. And no one's here at this point. And so the day just starts to happen. I'm like, so who are the headlining bands, you know? And he's like, you're the headliner. And at this point, you know, almost 10,000 people have came through the gates. And I'm thinking, I'm like nervous again. Because there for a while playing constant gigs, you know, I'd lost that ability to get nervous unless it was a new venue or a big full band show.
Yeah.
And I just was like, man, you know, I've got myself into a predicament here. I'm about to play for 16,000 people with an acoustic guitar. Like, am I going to be able to entertain these guys? And anyways, get up there, play the show. That night and the week following that, they just were flooded with emails from people saying, like, oh, who was your artist? Like, we want to know who he is. Because at the time, I hadn't even thought through. They had these two giant video screens. I hadn't even thought through, like, I didn't bring any merch. I didn't have my social medias up. There was no one knew who I was except for when I would say on the mic, my name's Fred Lee IV, and I play with the band Late Night Special. I'm from North Carolina, you know. And play this show. They invite me to come back 2 weeks later to do the Michigan show. I go up and do it in Michigan again. It was a little bit smaller festival, but it went great. And they had asked, they said, you know, it was a reschedule. And they said, our MC can't make it. Is there a way you could MC this event? Well, I had watched him MC the event in Texas. And I said, I'll give it a try. Why not? You know, like I'd kind of MC'd for Shakedown. You know, I'd done that. And that was where I kind of started to chime in. You know, I was like seeing what they were doing. I realized they kind of had a skeleton crew for the size of event they were doing. And some of them had worked in festivals before, but they were different. They were like, or big events. They were like a color run, or they were doing this thing called Slide Your City, which they would bring like a half mile long slip and slide and find a huge hill. And these people were slip and sliding at this event. And anyways, I just kind of started to chime in. I crushed the MC thing. Same thing happened in Michigan. All these people were like, dude, who are you? You know, and they're like, we love it. So they signed me up for 2020. I became the headlining artist for 2020 and talked to him about introducing the band for a show that year. Well, as you know, COVID struck, and somehow we still did about five or six events that year, and it went great. I was the MC for most of them. The old MC had came back in and done a couple as well, but he was kind of moving on from that position, and they liked that I could do the MC work, and I was a good artists to have there, because they had a couple artists that were good, and then they had a couple that were, they were like, what were we thinking? You know, they had a couple people get up there and make some pretty big political stances and statements on stage, which is like a no-no at an event like this. It's one thing if it's your crowd of people that you brought out, but anyways, just kind of secured that. And all this time, you know, I'm just thinking in my head, you know, when I met the owner, I was like, I'm gonna blow these people away. And they're going to ask me to do this again. And then that happens the next year. I'm going to play all of 2020 and I'm going to get locked in. I'm going to be their artist forever, you know. Next year, get asked back in 2021. We finally bring the band in. The band starts playing and I, you know, we kind of became this staple piece of it. You know, I'm doing the MC work and now bringing a band to half the events each year. They're like, your band's incredible. Each show would get better. We'd bring like a keyboardist when we only had a four piece before. We turned into five piece, then a six piece. You know, we just built the shows bigger and better, and the pay became better, and the appreciation just kept climbing. And my voice was really starting to get heard in the room of the leaders and the managers of the festival. They're like, we like your ideas. You know, you have a lot of good ideas. And I was like, well, I ran a festival back home on a small scale. So I know a lot of the red tape, and I know it just scales up, you know, and you've scaled up the event. So I'm here for you guys. Like, I love this. And the energy of the festival is just incredible, man. It's such a positive vibe, and it's all walks of life, every race, every age, every, you know, I laugh because I'm like, you got your Trump supporters sitting beside your Joe Biden supporters. No one's arguing. There's no fights. There's nothing negative about it. It's such a positive event. So I fell in love with that aspect and was like, this is powerful. I've always been a part of wanting to just be with the light, you know. I want to be shining light on everybody and creating these beautiful experiences. And these people had built this, and I was glad to contribute ideas. So end of 2021, they kind of brought me on as like an entertainment director and allowed me to continue being the headliner and the MC for the festival, but starting to bring in, I had this idea. I was like, you know, if we go to these 15 different locations, what if we started bringing in local acts, you know, some younger local acts that are kind of have their own the rise. We bring them in, they get introduced to 10,000 people in their community they would maybe never meet. We could possibly start doing shows with them the night before the event, giving away 50 tickets to the festival, you know, making awareness in the community that we're supporting the community and building. And they liked that idea. So I kind of assumed in 2022, I was saying, I want to be the entertainment director of this festival. You know, like I'm already booked. I want to book opening acts because the budgets were getting better. They wanted to bring in a little bit more music. It helped kind of entertain the day. And so I started doing that. And I put a mix on it of bringing some local friends of mine from cities that I knew or people from Charlotte and brought them out to get their share of the exposure. Like I said, I'd been gifted this awesome position to share. Yeah. And I wanted to do that with my friends. So started doing it with my friends and mutual connections in different cities I'd made. And in 2023, kind of became like the full bore entertainment director for that year. And they also had kind of mentioned they were looking to kind of brand me as the professional face for the event. And so it just kind of just kept getting better and better. And I was just like so proud and honored to be a part of it. And I believed in it. And again, it slowly became my second family. Like, I love everyone who's involved. We all have such a high belief in each other. And that was one thing that I saw that kept growing, was that the festival is growing, the income is growing, but everyone else was getting pieces of that pie, you know, and they were, you know, we were taken care of. I had started voicing ideas about, like, let's make sure we, you know, day of show, we're catering, we're taking care of the staff. You know, you guys have the same 20 people flying around the country to these events. Mm. Let's invest in them. Let's make sure that they're happy here, because there's something that happens when you're doing something for a long time. You can get bored and complacent, and you know, you can start finding the problems you think that's going on, when really it's been this way the whole time. Now you're just picking it apart. But what they've done is continue to invest in everyone, myself and the band included, and it just became such a great aspect. Everybody's happy. Everybody looks forward to these months through the year that we go out on tour with the company, and it's became everyone's like vacation. Everybody's happy to be there and happy to be working. It's not just a job, but it's like a home away from home, a destination getaway, you know, or a work vacation. You know, everyone's getting to go work, but it's like such a good environment. And so I've just became a staple piece of that festival. As of now, like I said, I treat it as if, you know, I could lose it tomorrow. And I work as hard every day on it as I can to, you know, maintain my position. And I kind of just remember this quote from the cello player from the Averitt Brothers. There's an Averitt Brothers documentary out, and in the documentary, the cello player said, you know, I do everything I can when we're on tour. I take out the trash. I'll cook breakfast. I do every extra thing I can to make sure I maintain my position in this band, because it's Seth and Scott. It's their band. They're the original Averitt Brothers, and they could find another cello player. They could maybe find someone who's better than me, but I make sure I carry my weight and when they don't ask me to, in every aspect. And I am working every day to create my position and my job security. Yeah. And that stuck with me, you know, really heavy, because I had played with people who were like, I just want to show up and play. I'm like, oh, cool, lazy. Like, you know, come on, what do you mean you just want to show up and play? There's a laundry list of work to do. You just want one person to do it, and you just show up and play. And so it really stuck with me heavy, and I've tried to carry that mentality throughout my career in music, and it just bled over into the festival and being able to, you know, sign up and commit to extra duties with the festival that, you know, I saw like, hey, you guys are pretty stressed on day of show. Like, let me and the band run out that morning. We'll run a couple errands for you. And then we'll come back. We'll sound check. We'll get ready, you know, and the band, everybody in the bands fell into those roles of like helping me do that. And, we've constantly gotten an increase in pay, and I've been able to pay them better. And, you know, we're getting to perform our music at these shows, not just cover songs. You know, we're playing pretty much 80% of our music for these crowds of 10,000 people at each show. And it's just been a true blessing, man. And like I said, I felt the responsibility to share that with as many people as I could, you know, whoever I have under my umbrella that I want to help. You know, I'm trying to pass that opportunity around to them and take them out and share some of this opportunity, because I don't know when tomorrow they could call and be like, hey dude, you know, we're going to do something different next year. I'm like, okay, you know, I just want to be able to share what I have, while I have it, while, you know, not necessarily being selfish, but making sure I do keep myself in mind and making sure, you know, I'm not over exhausting myself and I can give, you know, myself and my group what they need to continue to grow. And again, the owner of the festival had set me down, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, and he'd said, you know, one thing that I'll tell you is always pay your crew great. Like, always take care of your crew. Like, you know, if you need to take a hit, like, make sure your band is taken care of. Like, treat your guys right. And it's just, like I said, something growing in a leadership role is just like taking those things to heart and making sure that everyone's getting treated well and feels valued at the shows, feels like, you know, they're getting an equal share of what the glory of it is. And like I said, it's been real incredible. And like I said, with my experience with my local festival, you know, I've got ideas that I always wished, you know, hey man, if we had an investor, we could really pull this off, but never had an investor. Well, now it's kind of like you've gotten to step into this role, help these people grow in certain aspects. You know, they are investing in you, they are investing in this festival, and now you kind of have an investor. And again, it's not my festival, and I don't have the top say on anything, but my voice is heard in the room. And I always thought that was really cool. And to have Shakedown was really just led by me, and I had a couple friends who helped, but no one ever really like put it on their back as in like, this is ours and it's do or die. You know, we got to make sure we put our ass in this or we lose our ass. Yeah. And in this festival community, it's everyone feels so highly invested that I know that like if I care so much about it, the next person beside me does too. Yeah. And we're all looking to make it happen. You know?
Well, it's so cool how that bleeds off. Like, you know, it's one of the more fortunate things about being able to play multiple places, and you know, especially if I can only really play mainly Fridays and Saturdays, is being able to be a little bit more selective with where I get to play. And there are some times where I will choose a venue where I know the whole staff, and they're just having like you can tell when everyone enjoys what they do and that they're really excited to be there. And it changes the room. There have been so many times I've like, you know, even if it's, you know, $50, maybe $100 difference, but it's like, man, like y'all just, I believe in y'all and as a team. And I feel like a part of the family when I go there. Mm-hmm. That's so important. And I feel like that comes through when you put that investment. You know, my dad runs his own, you know, home building remodeling company. That was something from a young age, always going on a job with him. And he always made it, you know, if you're going to work for me, I'm going to make sure no one thinks it's like a nepotism, like you're going to be the hardest working person out there kind of thing. But rule number one was never just stand there. Like, I will make you sorry if you feel in a good way. But as always, you know, okay, you've done what you've were set to do. Even in the guitar shop, we were kind of talking about Elliott Guitars, being able to put that into practice. Okay, I'm done. All right, can I vacuum? Can I shovel? Can I clean this up? Take out the trash? Do whatever. Until manager, boss, man, whatever it is, is freed up and can kind of give me the next thing. But just being able to have that, take that initiative and just being able to, okay, you know what? Well, I have common sense. What can I do?
Yeah. Now, you know, and it's like, I guess sharing that mentality of like, rather than my job is done, it's like my job's never done. Like what can I do? You know, like you said, it takes, the easy thing would be to do was finish what you were told to do.
Check
and
mark.
Sit there. Yeah. Right. But you know, it's that extra initiative. And like I said, that thing from, what is his name? Is it Joe Kwan? I think is the cello player for the Everett Brothers. When he said that in that documentary, it really resonated with me because I had played with people, like I said, that were just like, just doing the minimum always. And I was always like, man, it takes the maximum. Yeah. And not just in music and everything. You know, you want to be at the top, then you got to give it the best effort. Because if you're not, someone else is. And it just speaks volumes of people when they're willing to do that. You know, it's so easy to look, you know, walk past a piece of trash on the street and there's a garbage can 5 feet in front of you. You could just pick it up and put it in, or you could just keep walking past. And it's like going back to that ripple thing. If someone sees you pick up a piece of trash and there's four pieces of trash.
It is so funny you say that. Yesterday I had to go to Home Depot to get some stuff for the wall behind you. And there was actually a grocery cart, and I was walking past the grocery cart, and it was just sitting on the curb. And, you know, first thought was, yeah, what a douche. And then I kind of started to walk past, and it's like, and you're just going to walk past it. And so it's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah,
you know, and it's one thing when it's in front of you, but when you walk past it, there's another voice where it's like, but now you're going to have to turn around, and then you really don't want to do it.
Yeah.
But then turn around, picked up the cart, put it back, you know. But it's that thing. It's just taking pride in what's around you. And
that really resonates with me because early on when I was like 18 or 19, I worked at Lowe's and I was a buggy pusher, and it always drove me crazy. I'm like, dude, just put it in the crowd or walk. Yeah. Why don't y'all walk it back? And then going into not working there and doing that, you know, just I'll leave the buggy here on the curb, and then being like, you're walking away from me, you're like,
oh, I'm the schmuck
who's watching. yeah I'm now the smuck, which makes you internally, I'm like, go get the cart, go, I'll take it back into the store. I usually take it right back into the store where the corral is. I'm like, I'm not even gonna put it in the corral in the parking lot, I'm gonna do one extra here. Because I was always like, when I worked that job, I'm like, why are people so lazy? You know, but then you have your choice to be lazy, you'll get that chance. And it's funny you say that, because like I said, that's the mentality. And it just takes practice, you know, it's practicing those habits, and you have a choice. It's not like someone didn't give you the choice to grab the cart or take the cart back. It's like,
well, and it gets less awkward the more you do it. You know, those voices, it's just not as intense.
Yeah. It's like you said, I mean, it's a habit just to leave it there. You know, it's just, you're just creating a quote unquote bad habit. But it can be a good habit if you just take it back, you know? And those are like, there's, like I said, there's so many things in life where you could chalk it up to these examples. So it's, that's kind of, like I said, I've seen that as my role. And, sometimes I feel bad, because like when I first started, I would help the sound company break down, you know, they're not paying me. I felt bad, because I was like, man, I can leave at 10 o'clock when it's over. They're here till 2 a.m. breaking down. Like, I know how to wrap cables. I know how to break down a video wall. And that's another thing. There was reward in that. I didn't realize. I'm like, man, this is hard work. You guys are out here. Y'all bust your ass, man. This is awesome. But then I realized, me helping, it taught me. If I went and bought my own sound company today, I would know how to do it, because I'd watched these guys do it. Now, I'd been running sound for years, but never on that grand scale. And so I learned so much in just stepping up and helping when without being asked. And that led into, you know, learning so much about the business and learning what's going on, learning what it takes, observing that, man, these are my friends who helped me get in here. And, you know, they're here before I get here, and they're here after I leave, you know. And sometimes I don't stick around and help them anymore. It makes me feel bad. But I also, you know, now I've got so much more responsibility to the festival and my band. You know, I'm kind of worried about taking, they're always like, we're hungry, let's go eat, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay. But, you know, always always really enjoyed working with them after the shows because it was hard work. And some nights it'd be cold, and I'm like, man, this sucks.
I got right here.
They're like singing songs. They're making up songs called Cold Cables.
I got right
there. I'm like, man, this is wild. But it's just such, again, just that family aspect of being with these guys and getting to experience such a strong bond. And you don't get that just taking the easy road.
Well, neat, even on a small scale, right? Like, I've been in so many shows. I remember when we were putting in our hours, I don't know if you know Beantown and Matthews, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, anyway, but, you know, staying afterwards and long after the whole band left, but, you know, I'm that rule of leave the place better than when you came in. And at the very least, it's like, okay, look, we had to move tables when we came in. The tables back.
Right. Easy. Kind of, right?
Yeah. And, you know, oftentimes I'd start by myself. Sometimes some of the staff would kind of help. And, but the number of times I've heard from like the waiters and waitresses, like, y'all are so thoughtful. Like, you know, no one does this. You know, y'all are so cognizant of levels. Like, you know, you let it to where everyone can have a conversation, yet still be heard. And, you know, you're not being just, it's all about you and, you know, cranking it up to 11. And the number of times I feel like personally that's resulted in greater financial, you know, now we're getting more gigs or whatever it is, kind of comes by kind of building that rapport, but it came from a good place, right? It wasn't coming from this, you know, oh, you know, let me self-serve, but from that kind of selfless act, there's actually like financial benefit and almost like job security kind of found.
Yeah, totally. There is a reward for it, even though that's not what incentivized you to do it, right?
Right.
And I think, like I said, more people would realize that if they just kind of like step out of that realm of just, again, being comfortable. It's really a comfortable thing. And it's weird in this life now, people are pursuing things for higher financial incentive or like for this or for that to gain this or to gain that. And it becomes this weird, like kind of vicious cycle of people hunting down a greater gain to be more comfortable, which we all know being comfortable is dangerous.
No.
So it's like you're constantly working towards securing comfort when it's like, you know that when you get comfortable, you die.
Yeah, I mean, look at the retirement thing.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. Yeah, when you're like comfortable, like it's dangerous.
Yeah. You look at it's a crate. I'm not going to spout the numbers because I don't trust my memory at all. But when you look at the numbers of like people that retire, when they just straight up do nothing, I want to say it's like within like 4 to 8 years. You're dead.
Yeah.
And it's like, but you know, it's the people that keep, you know, let me go volunteer at a local shelter or, you know, the soup kitchen or pick up crafts or something with community. Like
a life in motion stays in motion.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and that's what, like I said, I mean, it's, you know, I'm like anyone else, you know, I want to make more money. I want a bigger house. You know, I want to not have a house payment. I want all these things that'll just make me maybe more comfortable. But sometimes it's like tricking yourself into just constantly having new goals and having new stepping stones that you've got to reach, you know, because it's just a life of more. You know, we always want more in this life, and figuring out what is more than just a financial gain or like just these material things. And, that's what I say. 10 years ago, if you said, hey, Fred, you're going to be playing, you know, 15, 20 shows a year, 10,000 people at these shows, and you'll make this X amount of dollars, and you'll have this, you know, you'll have a song with almost 1 million plays. Like, I'd be like, dude, I made it.
Yeah.
But here I stand, and I don't feel like I've gone anywhere. You know, even though I recognize that I've made a great stride and continue to grow, I still have a hunger for the growth. And
yeah.
Happy to have that, you know, happy to not just be complacent with what I have and be wanting better and wanting to continue moving forward and keeping me hungry. And is all the while taking these rewards of my hard work and being able to share them with other people and maybe open doors or open up inspirational avenues for other people to continue moving forward. Because, you know, as I've discussed with you, you know, I have a ton of people who have more respect for me now than I ever have. But now I also see the people who almost are like upset that you're doing this and getting this opportunity. And I'm like, that's kind of a weird way to be. you know? And there was a part of my immaturity of being that same person, like seeing another band get a gig and you're like, well, how did they get that gig? I deserve that gig. And it's like, dude, you'll get it one day, you know, your turn will come, you know? And it's like, be happy for that person rather than being like, why didn't I get it? You know, you just got to be happy. And I think it's natural to think that way. It's like, why am I getting it? Why are they getting it and I'm not? You know, that's natural, but it takes the, you know, take that path of resistance to go against that thought and being like, man, hell yeah, guys, like you got that, man. Y'all deserve it. I see y'all working hard too. You deserve that. And one day I hope I can do that gig too, rather than being like, why didn't I get it? You know?
Right. Well, and I think that kind of leads into like this false narrative of like scarcity. You know, I was going through a similar thing because I've got this massive Excel sheet, just, you know, all the information, but for all these venues and contact information and everything. And I had a few friends that were starting bands and looking for places to play. And there's a part of me that was like, well, you know, if you give access to this, that means there's now going to be competition. So now you might not get a show. Da, 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 da. But at the end of the day, I'm like, you know, what's that greater why? And it's what I found too is it's even pushed me to be better. It's like, cool, you've got competition. Now what can you do to set yourself apart to kind of be better? But even if not, just like that community, like pulling people in. I mean, it's a real thing to fight against. But it's like, I don't know. I feel like there's so many opportunities, and John even kind of touched on this before about how to kind of create your own opportunities, going through the list and doing private events, whatever it is. But I feel like that false belief of scarcity, like there's not going to be enough for me. And so now I have to be selfish because, well, yeah. And I'm like, I feel like there's enough for.
There's plenty to go around. Yeah. I mean, like, especially like in music, I think it is like 3-4% of the world knows how to play music. So you got to think that means there's almost a 97% consumerism of music, you know? So like there's plenty of fans to go around. There's plenty of venues to go around. You can't play the same venue every night, and man, bless you if you want to, dude. Good Lord, man. Like, you know, talk about monotony. But, and it's also the reward of like, hey, man, if you send me that contact list and I book some shows off of it and you were kind enough to share that, well, I've got a contact list too. Here's mine. Or next time I have a gig I can't do, I'm calling you because you helped me, you know, and it's creating that community rather than a, they talk about it. Competition is weakness. You know, it's, you know, why be so competitive, you know? And you see that even like in like professional sports, you know, like, yeah, they're competitive and they're going to each other. But at the end of the games, man, it's like homies are swapping jerseys, signing each other's jerseys. Like they love each other. They're friends. Some of them played together on other teams, but now they're competing against each other. And it kind of rolls like that in music at the highest levels of this, you know. No one feels they're competing for these gigs because they know their chance will come at this gig. You know, they'll get their chance to play it. And you just got to be happy and proud for your friends for having those opportunities, just like you'll get one day, and hope that in the return for you supporting them, you know, they'll be supporting you too, you know. And why couldn't we all support each other? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Well, why we wouldn't?
I think kind of starts to put you in the right mindset, just like you were saying, of like, you know, if I can get my head in the right space now when I'm not there, how much better does that prepare me when my time does come? Because now I'm not going to be sitting on this self-righteous, oh, ha, I finally came, you know, this is, you know, I deserve this the whole time, da da da. But, you know, having that humility and,
Yeah. And that's why I was, you know, I spoke to you earlier about, you know, the situation in town with the gigs and kind of being like that, you know, I've played here for this long, you know, like I deserve to be a part of the group that continues to play here. And it's just like, man, you know, don't be so entitled, you know, don't get so much on your high horse, because at the end of the day, we're, you know, I think a lot of people believe in that idea of we're all one, you know, we're all equals, right? Everybody's pushing that cause, but then we all continue to walk around like, I'm better than him. I would never do something like that. And it's like, weren't you just saying that we're all equals and we're all created as one? Yeah. It's like, dude, if you're going to live it, be about it. You know, if you're going to preach it, let's act. And and God forbid, man, like I have been there, bro. I have been immature. I have been caught saying like, well, we're better than that band, or like, what's that band get that opportunity? And I look back and I'm like, dude, how disgusting. You fool. You know, you're out here preaching this thing, but you know, I'm here. human. I've dabbled in those mistakes as well. And, you know, I hope to only just grow and inspire people, including myself, to never participate in that kind of mentality again. And those thoughts come into your brain, you gotta just squash them, man, and remember that we are all one. We are all, like, again, it's not just about me. It's about a whole group of people and the whole group of the human race, man. Like, you know, everybody's out here trying to make it. Everybody's just trying to live their short 100 years, if they get that, their 50 years, their 60 years, whatever their lifespan is. Everyone's just trying to do the best they can and enjoy that to the max. And, you know, there's nothing, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm grateful to be a musician and have the skills, but, you know, it doesn't make me, it's not going to get me accepted into heaven because I played music, you know, it's not going to get me the presidential ballot because I played music, you know, it's like, it's not that important, even though there is a high importance to music, right? It has its place in the world, but it doesn't make you special and above the law or above, you know, put you in a, in a bracket of, like, you know, you're the deserving and they're not, you know.
A different box.
Yeah, it doesn't, right?
No.
So.
Well, yeah, I guess just kind of wrapping up, and since we're already on this theme of kind of like pulling people in, is there anyone you would recommend who you would like to see kind of brought on?
On the podcast?
Yeah.
My buddy Joe May. Joe May plays in a band called Month of Mondays. He just started his project. He was in a band called Pluto Gang, but he's been someone as of recently, man, I've just really been inspired as, like, anytime I asked a question or needed some advice or, you know, hey, who books this, who does that, you know, he's very responsive and, like, just openly willing to share. And I've always thought that was great because I've always ran into a lot of roadblocks where people are like, I can't just give you the information. He doesn't want his contact just passed around. And I'm like, oh, you're one of those gatekeeper people.
All right,
cool, man. Yes, sir, gatekeeping gatekeeping the bar in town. Ooh, you know, so, but, and not to, you know, not to degrade anybody who's done that, man. You know, like I said, it's something that, you know, maybe comes natural and just in human nature, and you have to learn, you have to mature, you have to grow over those moments. But Joe is someone, man, that I've just been able to open up to, and I've always been fascinated how he was pretty much had a great band with Pluto Gang. They recently kind of disbanded. Everybody was going in a different direction, but Joe had put in a lot of the work into the band and helped brand and push that band to new heights. And I was watching that happen. And after the band disbanded and we got together and talked, he was so open to share, like, a lot of tactics and things they were doing, and it was always very honest with me about, like, hey, you know, like, you're asking for this advice, can I just be honest with you and say I see you doing this and I think you could do it this way and it would really help your situation. And just been real inspired by him and real appreciative of the friendship. Also huge supporter of the music, man. He's a great artist and just, like, genius, little genius mind. And so, like, it'd be great to have him on here, man. I'm sure he's a great hang and a great talk. And there's really, like, so many people. I mean, you're going to have a nice long career in this podcast because there's a lot of people in Charlotte who have a lot to offer and a lot of people in the area that really could just share and kind of push it on. But that's one that really pops out and stands out, you know. He really is a good dude and just good success with his band now and the band, the previous band he was in, and a lot of good connections. So,
okay, man.
Yeah, man.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely.
All right, so that's a wrap of our conversation with Fred Hines from Late Night Special, otherwise known as Fred Lee Ivy. For all links, please check out the show notes below.